and if you would, please just answer as short or as long as you want to. And if you don't want to answer something, just don't answer it. First, let me say I really appreciate this. I know you, well, you're not seeing too many baseball games right now, but I know you probably got better things to do.
No, it's no problem. It's snowing up here, and I'm just sitting here reading the paper.
Is it real snow or just a little bit of stuff coming down?
Well, it's going to start to stick to the roadway here in a little bit unless the temperature goes up.
Now, the kids this morning, I'm in Lexington, the kids this morning were hoping, it was calling for snow last night, they were hoping, you know, one snowflake here and school's canceled, but we didn't have anything, so they all had to go off. Okay, you were a professional baseball player for 19 years?
Well, I don't know, 17 or 18, I guess.
Well, let me see.
From
53 through 72 minus 71, but you, the last 2 years, you were
okay, part-time.
Yeah.
I was player-coach at Tulsa in 70 for half a year and then was coach. And then in 72, I was active as player-manager, although I tried to limit my playing time as much as I could.
Yeah, well, you only had, what, 60-something at-bats that last time. You must have just been filling in.
Small amount. It was only by necessity that I got that many.
Well, you, 15 of your years, and that's counting the year at Tulsa, you were a Triple-A player.
Mm-hmm.
But you only had two short stays in the major leagues. What kept you down?
Well, you know, obviously that would be my opinion as opposed to other people.
Sure, of course.
Decisions. But, you know, looking back at it objectively, several things. Number one, I was not an outstanding physical tool player. I was more of a performer, in my opinion. And I think the main reason was that at that time, managers were not as adept as they are now at putting players in positions that they could succeed in.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in the minor leagues, I was an everyday player and was able to produce. In the major leagues, you know, when you went up and pinch hit, it was a, you know, two or three time a week proposition.
Right.
And, you know, admittedly, you have to do the job whatever reason, you know, whenever you're called upon, in whatever role. And I was not able to produce as a pinch hitter, and thusly did not get, you know, the opportunity to get a long-term look. And, you know, unfortunately in this game, sometimes you don't learn certain things until it's too late. You know, learn how to handle a pinch hit situation.
Sure.
That came later. And as I said, mainly, I don't think I was put in a role where I had the opportunity to succeed.
Well, half your major league at-bats were as a pinch hitter.
Yeah.
And that is very difficult.
And also the others were after sitting on the bench for a long time. But, you know, as I said, that could sound like an excuse. It really isn't, because I realize you have to produce whatever role you're put in if you want an extended shot.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
If I always believed, and I know most people did who saw me hit, that if I was given that opportunity, I could have done it. But hey, that's the way life is in areas other than baseball too.
Yes, it's I think a fact of life in every endeavor. But you. At AAA, the pitching evidently held no mystery for you. You, seven times you batted over 300, and another year you had 299 or something like that, and nearly 300 home runs and a career 290 average. How many minor league all-star teams were you named to?
You know, it's tough. You know, I really, at this time or even at then, I didn't pay much attention to that. I'd have to stop and go through the years, but I would guess that, you know, a pretty honest figure would be probably about 8.
Okay, I know of 4, and it's very hard to find anything about minor leaguers from 30 and 40 years ago. But I know of 4, so I assume that with your...
What score do you for Triple A?
You were in 55 at Buffalo.
Okay.
Let me see. 58 at Birmingham.
I would imagine my first year, I was on the All-Star.
You must have been.
If in fact they picked one, because no, wait a minute. No, there was the guy that led the league was an old veteran, and he, although I hit what 340 or 350.
349.
He hit 370, so maybe I didn't make it the first year.
Well, there at Walsall, and then the next year at Durham, your numbers certainly were good enough, especially at Durham, 48 doubles, 23 home runs.
Well, I don't know. I don't even remember if I did then. In the first year, now that I remember, I did not, because the most valuable player in the league and the guy who won the league batting title and probably had, you know, more extra base numbers was a guy that was in his 30s and you know, on record and stuff, deserved it.
He was third base as well.
Yeah.
Well, that Rochester, you made it the All-Star team twice that I know of. I think it was 65 and 66, but that may not be right.
Well, I don't know. 8 was a guess. In some leagues, you didn't even, I'm not even sure they had All-Star teams.
Well, it's made a much bigger deal of today than it was back then.
You know, there were no games as such, so when the team was announced after the season, a lot of times, you know, it was not, it really wasn't an important issue, and I couldn't give you the exact number.
Right.
So I do, the one fact that I am proud of in my minor league career was that, you know, toward the end when you could move to different teams because you were only protected on a double-A roster, I was always in demand because I was perceived as a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of pennant winners and things like that I was on, I think... indicated that.
That's always a good reputation to have.
Well, and another thing that in the leagues I played in, I was a lot of times voted the toughest out by the pitcher,
mm-hmm.
you know, by the pitchers in the league. So, and that was my reputation, you know, mostly in Triple A, obviously, where it means something that. I was at my best with men on base. As Luke Easter used to say, to tell me, you can hit with them men's on.
Well, the record bears that out pretty well. I don't have your strikeout totals, but as I remember, and I was a boy, and following a minor league player back in the 50s and 60s was very difficult, and there was nothing that covered it till the end of the season. But I used to look up your record at the end of each year, and I don't remember there being many strikeouts.
Well, my strikeouts, my first year in AAA, I struck out, I would think, 90 times or so. I never struck out 100. You know, I was playing there after 2 years' experience, so. And pitching was wasn't better, but what there were more hard throwers,
mm-hmm.
as such. They didn't have some of the trick pitches, so I'm not trying to say the pitching was better then. It just was a different type, and there were some blowers, and it was an adjustment, you know, for a young player. So I would say my top strikeouts was about 90, and generally later on, when I really learned to hit was 40 to 50.
I seem to remember the 50 and maybe occasional 60 from the years I used to check on it, which is nothing compared to what they're doing now. Well, your first year at AAA, you were 20 years old. Back then, today you're going to find a lot of boys in their early 20s at AAA, but back then there were a lot of mature ball players who had been around for years, so it was a much bigger step for a 20-year-old in the mid-50s than it is now.
Yeah, it certainly was, and it was circumstances and a lot of luck involved in my getting there in spring training.
Well, evidently you were the best third baseman in the league because you weren't into the All-Star team that year. I remember that somewhere I read somebody giving you the nickname Little Bull. Where did that come from? That was the year, I believe, that I read it, the year that you were at Buffalo.
I don't know. I really don't know how, nicknames occur in some.
Did it stick?
Somebody gets some idea and carry through with it. I don't know. If that one was one of them, I don't remember.
I don't remember even where I read it. That's been a long time ago. I was about 13 years old, so some things seem to stick with me and others don't. Well, after your, at the end of your career, you started coaching and managing. How long did you manage?
I managed a total of 9 years to begin with, from AA my first year in 72, through AAA. I was, fortunate enough that I never had to go to the real low leagues, although I went, I moved from AA to A to AAA, back to A and into AA, so I became kind of an organizational manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, whose system were you? Eventually you coached the Pirates. Were you managing the Pirates
system?
Yeah,
After 1 year with the Cardinals, 2 years with the Cardinals, one at Tulsa's player coach, and another one is a special assignment scout. Pittsburgh, through Harding Peterson, who had managed against me when I was playing, liked my potential managerial potential, and as soon as I was available, got permission from the Cardinals to make me an offer, which I accepted.
Mm-hmm. And then you, how long did you stay in the Pirates system?
Well, I'm still with them.
I thought for some reason you were with the Indians.
No.
Oh, what a dummy. I'm sorry. Maybe it's just the fact that where you live that I associate. I know you sent me your business card, mm-hmm. and it's got Pirates on there. Oh, I apologize. That's not paying attention to details. When did you become a full-time scout?
After the 1987 season, which I managed Salem again.
Mm-hmm.
There was an opening, and for certain reasons, I figured I'd be better off in scouting. And to backtrack a little, I managed through 1980, at which time Pittsburgh, through Harding Peterson and Murray Cook, wanted me to become a hitting instructor because my teams were generally good hitting clubs, and I am a good hitting instructor, if I might say so. And so they finally talked to me about taking that, and I did, and along with that, I pretty soon evolved into being a little more where I helped with player moves and became, at that time, kind of a field coordinator where I ran the instructional part of the instructional league and set up schedules for spring training and all of that. To coordinate the instruction between the major league club and all our minor league clubs.
Yeah, that's a tremendous responsibility.
And, it was fun because Chuck Tanner was there, and I had the full support of Pete and Branch, Ricky, who was the farm director.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved up to major league coach, and that's the year the team completely fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Because of age, and it had the drug problem. Then new ownership came in, and Sid came in then. And Sid was Sid is a different type person. Sid is a mover and did not take kindly to anybody who had been in the organization in the past, and not many of us survived. And I'm not knocking Sid. Originally, our relationship, because I had been there and was associated with, you know, the people that he was replacing, we did not hit it off. I don't think he thought much of me, and but he did allow me to continue. And before 1986 was over, it changed entirely. You know, I managed one of the teams in the instructional league for him, and then he became a big booster of mine. We went out in 87, and he provided me with a team that, you know, was a winner. It was too good for the league, and we ended up with the best record, won the, you know, the playoffs and everything. And at that time, you know, there were new people in kind of doing the job that I had done. And some of their methods and stuff I did not agree with. So rather than being a person who would be in the system managing and complaining even inwardly about how they were doing it, I thought it best to move into another area of the another area of baseball.
That makes sense.
And so I'm scouting was available, and they held it for me until the end of the season, at which time I went directly out to scout. Although, as I said, by that time, Sid treated me very well and was kind of pushing me, although not, you know, not forcing me to stay in the player development end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt better at the time. You know, why sound like sour grapes? Because even if you were going to make a suggestion that was valid, the guy that replaced you would probably look at it as trying to undermine him. So I didn't want to do that.
That is unfortunately human nature, and there's a lot of it. And again, as you say,
I went into scouting, and probably, unless certain things would change, we'll finish in the scouting ranks. Although 2 years ago, there was the opening as minor league coordinator again, and I interviewed for it with Chuck Lamar and was offered the job, but did not think at that time it was in my best interest to make the move.
Mm-hmm. Then obviously you were finding a lot of enjoyment in scouting.
Yes, I like scouting because it gives you independence. You can develop your own schedule. Nobody's breathing down your neck. You're more on your own doing this as long as the results are there. But my first love is on the field. It's tough to leave players that you know. I spent more time with some of the players than I did with my own son. And you really became close to them. I think that was my strong point. Because, you know, in instruction, I'd be silly to say, hey, I'm the best instructor around. There are some areas that I'm very good in. There are some areas that other people are much better in. But through a combination of those things and being able to communicate with the players, being able to, you know, be in charge but yet not be overbearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's some of the way the kids are treated now. Some organizations, in my opinion, kind of look down at the young players and
ordered around instead of worked with.
And then the kids pick up on that.
Of course they do.
They talk, and we've got to give them credit for a lot more intelligence at times than some of the people do. So anyway, through a combination of that and I still prefer the field. I think I can contribute more to an organization in that role, but at this time, that's not the role I'm playing. So I'm very satisfied with this, although, as I said, my first preference would have been that.
I understand. So possibly something offered down the road you would consider switching again?
Yes or no, because now you're getting at the, as you can tell now by a lot of the major league coaches and stuff, they're going to the people who are in their 30s.
Right.
Rather than the guys that are in their 50s. So, you know, maybe that part of it is passed me by now. I don't know.
I just saw where the Yankees just rehired Russ Meyer, and he's in his late 60s.
Yeah, well, Russ is going to be a bench coach, and I know Russ well. In fact, I talked to him this summer again, and have, you know him real well because for, you know, all the years I was a minor league coordinator and ran instruction league, the Yankees shared the locker room with us.
Uh-huh.
And Monk was down there almost all those years, either full or part-time.
Well, I wish him luck going back at this age.
Yeah, I do too. It's interesting that they took him up there, but I guess somewhere during the, you know, Buck Showalter's minor league managing career, Monk was a big influence on him.
So I'm sure he was.
Good to see.
He influenced a lot of them over the years. Is there anybody, excuse me, I'm sorry, is there anybody you have scouted in the last few years that we should be looking for?
Well, the thing of it is, all the, you know, high picks in the area. See, scouting now is, it's a lot of mostly where you pick.
Yes.
For instance, my first year of scouting, 1988, the top three in the country happened to be in my territory. Andy Bennis,
mm-hmm.
Mark Lewis, and Steve Avery. Well, you know, you could have been a non-baseball person who never saw a game and recognized that these were three outstanding players that were going to be in the big leagues.
Right.
But, you know, when you're picking 24th or 25th, those players, you know, they were long gone and we all knew that.
Right.
So my point is, for instance, the Atlanta scout, who is a good friend of mine, in those time periods picked up Steve Avery. The year before that, Kent Merker out of Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the Braves picked were last and picked first.
Right.
So, although you're aware of those players, a lot of it depends on, you know, where you're picking. So, my top pick, my 4 years, although I've seen every good player in the area, was a boy from University of Kentucky, Chris Estep.
Uh-huh.
Who,
yeah. Just right that word. I'm in Paris, so just right up the road from there.
Yeah, he's played 4 years and has outstanding tools. He has impact major league tools, but to this point has not put together a year hitting where he can keep his strikeouts down. You know, he strikes out 120 times a year.
Mm.
And he's not made the adjustment to this point, although the last 6 weeks of the season, you know, in Double A last year, he did do it. Now, whether he can carry it over or not. In fact, the reason I know that he called me, he's finishing up at UK. Him and Billy White, who was another high pick from there the year after. So, you know, I've got a few kids in the 40th rounds that are making progress, but, you know, that's a very long shot.
Well, when you're scouting for a consistently good team like you have to do, you've got to be a whole lot sharper scout. It's, as you say, it's not too difficult to pick Andy Bennis out of a group of boys when you've got the first shot at him. But when it gets to you, you have got to have seen considerably more, even in the first round. It makes, I think, a little bit more difficult job for you.
Well, you know, it is. Scouting is like every other facet of baseball or work. No matter what job you're in, you seem to think that the other person's job is easier.
I think that's probably true.
And it's the same in player development. When you're out there managing, you look at some of the players that come in and say, "Holy cow, who signed him?" And when you're in scouting, you send a player out and you say, "Jesus, they didn't give him a chance. They don't recognize talent." What scouting is about a whole lot when you get away from the first rounds is projection.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this kid going to be 2 or 3 years from now? You can take a high school, say a pitcher, and he has no average major league pitch. So what interest do you have in him? You know, some people say, well, geez, he, you know, I heard that this year. Doesn't have an average major league pitch. Well, my comeback was, hey, I was in player development when John Smiley and Stan Belinda were there. They didn't have an average major league pitch. Look what they're, you know,
all
after
right.
They mature and develop. So a lot of it is, does your organization have the patience to work with a guy like that and allow you to use your judgment as to whether this guy will improve? Obviously, you're not going to hit on even half of those, because a lot of them, you know, what you see is a young pitcher, you hope that he will get better because of physical maturity and all of that stuff. A lot of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a crapshoot down here on being astute or lucky enough to pick one who is going to develop.
Yeah, I think the luck probably is a pretty big aspect of it. You've got, I guess, like anything else, you've got to go with everything you know, but then you still got to have somebody smile on you.
You know, and the thing of it is, too, in scouting now, you know, although I'm a scouting supervisor and I have 4 states now, I think they've added West Virginia to me. You on the high picks are subject to the cross checkers. There are people who come to see the top players in all areas of the country and then put them in their proper place.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I can't compare Andy Bennis to the guy in California because I've never seen him, most likely.
Right.
So somebody has to make that decision. And so the point there, too, is that on high picks, it's us plus the scouting director, the cross-checker, that make the decisions as to who is first to go.
And everything is relative, as you say. They have to be ranked accordingly, and you can't do that with your limited view of them. Go back to your career a minute, Steve. Is there a game at any level that stands out as your best game, or one that was a big thrill for you, or something like that?
You know, when you've played as many games as I have, it's tough to stand out. But I can remember several games that were significant. One in early in my career where I went into the final day of the season at Durham hitting .299. We had a doubleheader. The first game, I believe I went 2 for 5, which put me right at .300. And the next game, I went 5 for 5.
Wow.
To end up hitting, I believe it was .307.
Right.
That was one. Another big game was stands out was in the playoffs, the final playoffs in, I think, 1964 against Syracuse, where we were one run down in the ninth inning, two outs, and Joe Altobelli was up ahead of me and got a walk. And at that time, they brought in, they had a reliever that had pitched, at that time, many more games than relievers did at that time. His name was Bob Dustal, who got a brief look with the Tigers.
I remember him. Yeah.
He was a sinker slider pitcher and tough. Well, anyway, I was up and he got a strike on me with a slider away, and the next pitch I knew he was coming inside. I just knew by his pattern, and I hit a long drive that, you know, deep left, it went foul. It would have won the ball game. The next pitch, I guessed again. I was looking for slider away, and I got it, and I hit a home run to right center. We win the game, you know, by one run and win the playoffs. So that one stood out in my mind.
I bet it did.
And another series in I think 1960, we were in the Little World Series against Louisville. And to finish one game and to start another in Toronto, I hit 4 home runs in 5 at-bats.
Oh, my Lord.
Louisville beat us in the series, I believe, 4-2. But those were 3 quick ones that I remember.
That was in the Little World Series, 4 home runs and 5 at-bats?
Yeah.
Wow. Is that a record? It probably
is. I have no idea. No, that was in 2 separate games now. I don't remember how it occurred. I think 2 in one game made an out to finish the game and hit 2 to begin the next game.
I'll look that up. I've got a history of Louisville here, so it's probably got that in there. In the years you've been associated with baseball, and this, we're going on 40 years now, who's the best player and the best pitcher you came across?
There were so many of them that, there were some guys that were especially tough on me that weren't great pitchers, and there were some good pitchers that I hit well. So it was, I knew early on, my first year in AAA, that Don Drysdale was going to be a hell of a pitcher. he was pitching for Montreal, and he was very tough, and. I had the misfortune, I guess, of during my good years of hitting, we were playing in Jacksonville,